Blog Talk Radio.
And this is the world of inks, any which way but loose. Let me say a couple of things. By the way, Dale, if you want to know, that is the song is Green Onions. Yes, you're right. Give yourself the note, fabulous note prize. You deserve it. You deserve it immensely, Dale. Thank you very much for noticing what song it was. Yes, and if you heard the Blues Brothers movie, you've heard it once or twice. So we're good. I wanted to say a couple of things because it's been on my mind before I introduce my guests. I have a show called Anything Goes, and I was appalled about 2 weeks ago where I had the guest, Brooklyn, who's a very, very good horror writer, and we had childish adults who were idiots. They rudely called in and interrupted and played games and all during the show, and they were totally disruptive. And I will not be taking any phone calls unless it's a guest I know because, you know, I really don't need people playing around. This is a fun show, yes, but I don't need people playing around. It is, if you guys want to play pieces of fools, don't do it on my show. Play elsewhere. Okay, now I've done that little spotlight, and I'm sorry, ladies. We have two of our four guests. Hopefully the other two are slowly working their way down somehow. I don't know where they are. I don't babysit guests. I never have. But I have two wonderful guests. Let me start with Patty Barrington. Hiya, Patty.
Hi, Bennett.
Tell them. You're prolific, so go ahead and tell them about your books.
Oh, great. Thank you. I just want to say I love you. I haven't said that for a while. I haven't said so
Thank
much
you.
Since the last time I talked to you. I write pretty much everything futuristic. My first book and my actually first series of books was The Future Imperfect, and that was sort of a futuristic crime thriller set in Las Vegas in the near future, and that followed a serial killer over a certain amount of time. And right now, among my other books, my latest book, which literally just came out in June, is The Breed Chronicles, Book 1, and it's a little bit of a departure because it's not really a crime story, but it's sort of like a mini family saga kind of thing, and that's science fiction. And that takes place, well, on several different planets and in sort of, it's not really dystopian, but it kind of is. Takes place in New Cairo in Egypt on Earth in the year 2107. And I really love this book just because, first of all, my book cover, I love it. I'm in love with it. But also I kind of fell in love with the characters. And so at a point in my life when I was having like the writer insecurity blues, I just kind of turned to this little story, and it turned into a whole great big book. And I just sent it to a publisher, a brand new publisher, First Realm Publishing, and they really liked it. And so it came out, I think, in June. And that's, you know, my current work that I'm doing right now.
And let me introduce the guest that I had last night because I don't want her to think I forgot her. And I say this because I've already gotten four emails about you, dear.
Really? Okay.
Yes, and you want to slap my wrist for a naughty. I want to make sure you slap my wrist first because of the naughty. So please slap my wrist before you introduce. Slap my wrist. Okay, thank you very much. Slap, thank you. It hurt. You don't have to hit me so hard. Okay, Sherry Hayes. And yes, it's with an I, not a Y. I know, I screwed up. Yes, my wrist has been slapped. I know. Stop hitting me.
Want to make sure you don't forget now. For the next
I didn't kick the cat, so okay? I didn't kick the cat, and so we're good.
This is true.
Yeah, well, I'm being nice. I didn't kick the cat. You know, the cat wasn't in my way, so we're good. She has a new book, and I will say it because it is a great book. I've enjoyed it immensely. And I was in a book discussion earlier today, and they said to me, is there a good novel that's good? And I recommended it today to a group of people, so I was very, very happy in a book discussion. You want to tell them more about it, Sherry, and also the special deal you have with Amazon and whatever else you have?
Yeah, sure. I write contemporary romance, usually with a hint of mystery and suspense, and I also write BDSM romance as well. The one that just came out on Thursday, so it's a really new release, is Crossing the Line, and that is one of my contemporary romances with some mystery suspense. It is about a homicide detective who is a widower with a young daughter, and he finds out that his in-laws, who have been kind of helping him raise his daughter after his wife's tragic death, are moving 2 hours away. So he needs help getting, watching his daughter when he gets called out late at night to crime scenes. So his younger brother's wife's sister offers to move to Indianapolis and move in with him and his daughter to help take care of her. And after a few months, they go to his other brother's wedding, and some things happen that can't be reversed between him and his live-in nanny, Megan, and he may want to forget it, but she doesn't let him. And things happen from there. So, yeah, it's kind of your unconventional nanny, employer story. It definitely, it has some of those elements, but it's definitely not your typical, which is kind of the theme with me. I kind of take the typical and twist it a little bit. But in celebration of the release of Crossing the Line, which is the third book in my Daniels Brothers series, from now until the 10th, which is Wednesday, we're offering the first book in the series, Behind Closed Doors, for 99 cents on Amazon, iBooks, and my publisher's website. And you can find links to all of those on my website, which is www.sherryhayesauthor.com, and yes, Sherry is with an I.
Yeah, I know. Slap me. It's all my fault. I've been slapped. I know. It's all my fault. I know. It's all my fault. I know.
I could borrow one of
Who
my
Who else
Dom's
do you blame?
Whip,
me,
you know?
What?
I said I had to borrow one of my Dom's whips,
you know? I wanted you to talk about Anna's story. I mean, that is also one of the best things you have, but that's okay.
Yes.
I'm prejudiced.
Yeah, that's okay.
Tell. I like what you have. You know, you get good stuff.
Yeah, they can go and find out all about that on the website and stuff. So, I mean, my website's got, book summaries and all that, and it's got divided out, but yeah.
And hopefully she'll
well.
Put an archive link of this show on there so everybody can go on there. It'll be nice. I like it. She wrote about one of our radio talks. Sherry is in my radio talk, and it was on there, and it's like somebody says, you're on her website? And I said, yes, I am. Oh, yeah. So I'm, it's like, yes, I know. Thank you. Thank you very much. Somebody said, I did a search on your name, and it's there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I was very, very happy with that. Thank you.
I've got to figure the links are probably going to end up on my publisher's website as well, because I told my publisher I was going to be on last night and tonight. They asked me for the links and if that would be archived. So I'm guessing they're going to
we're archived.
To their website as well.
We're archived. Yeah, I'm still hearing about shows I did 3 years ago. Oh, my God. You know.
That's a good thing,
I still get email from Dakota Cassidy fans. It's like, when is she going to do your show again? Now, Dakota Cassidy did my show last November. I'm still getting emails. And this is September of this year. So, it's like it's almost been a full year, and I'm still getting emails. And I love Dakota. She's a great lady. But it's like, oh, yeah, her publisher said, when is she going to do your show? I said, you ask her, I'll do it. I'll have her anytime she wants to come. You know, let me bring up a point here, because I got an email about a few days ago. They said to me, you always invite the same people all the time. I said, no, I don't invite the same people all the time. The last time Sherry did the show with me was about 2 months ago, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
With the last
like
release.
That, yeah. Yeah,
and Patty did it about, two months ago as well? About a month and a half, months ago, am I correct?
Yeah, about 2 months ago.
And to me, it's nice because, yes, it's people I know and trust, and know I have a good time there. I don't want to put a new author on that I don't know, and they're like, I will tell the story because it's true. I did a show with the great Diane Chapman. She is a great audio host, and I did her show High Visibility, and we had Garrison Keillor on the show. And how are you, Mr. Keillor? Fine. What's new? Nothing. And I, Diane were and I were Yahoo messaging while we're on the air because it was via phone patch like this is. But this was on KUCI-FM in Irvine, California, years ago. And I said, I'm going to ask him about Lake Wobegon. I couldn't spell it for damn, but I said, Garrison, tell me about Lake Wobegon. Now, of course, everything on there was taped and archived and everything else. And he says, it's been a good day in Lake Wobegon, and went on for 15 minutes.
Wow.
And it was like they took, I say 15 minutes, it may be 13 and a half, don't quote me. But it's like they had my voice on there, and of course they did it as it was a public, KUCI-FM was a public radio station of Irvine, California. And so basically they used that they pressed it to CD, and so you hear, Garrison, tell me about Lake Wobegon, and then he goes into it. And then, thank you, Garrison. So I'm booking ending the piece, but nothing you could write home about, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But
wow.
It's like, oh yeah, somewhere I will run into this and go yes, and see it on eBay and go, oh my God.
Yeah, I actually when I had a television interview last year when I went to Las Vegas for a conference and what. The lady at the television station, that's actually something she said to me. She, when she was actually walking me out, back out of the studio after the interview, she's like, I am so glad that you were comfortable. She said, you do not know how many publicists call us who are, and we're so leery about, bringing authors in to interview because so many of them do not know how to talk to the media. They don't know how to interview. They just aren't comfortable in front of people or the camera and just kind of freely talking. And she said, so you end up with this really stiff person that gives one or two word answers and you're trying to create sound bites and, an actual something you can put on, on air. And she said, she said it's so difficult sometimes, so you just never know what you're going to get. So
I've also noticed there are people that and I'm not going to say the author's name. He writes great cyberpunk horror, and I love the author. He's a great guy. He's a nice person. I've done some conventions with him. But he freezes. It's like, and I'm like wanting to kill him. And I'm not going to give his name. He works for, he writes for World Castle, and there are only 20 authors at World Castle right now, so you can pick who and choose who.
You can eliminate.
Yeah, you can eliminate whoever you want. He's a nice man. But they have like 16 people that write horror. And I love him dearly. He's a great person. I'm not trying to be negative or mean or anything. There's no mean-spiritedness on this. But it's like, hi, where are you? We miss you. Where are you? And he's like, what's new? And I did, thank God I did the show with Keith DeCandido, who has written Star Trek enough, and he's done conventions galore. And I love Keith. He's a great guy. And Keith and I were talking, and we kept going to him and saying, why don't you tell me what you think? And he finally said something, great, wonderful. And it was one of the think it was one of the Anything Goes hour shows, and it was like I was ready to kill him. Like, please, dear Lord, let this day be over. Yes, there are some authors, they're great, they can write beautiful work, but they can't talk.
Well, a lot of authors tend to be introverts. And, you know, a lot of introverts are not really comfortable talking about themselves and really, you know, they tend to like to stay in their houses, in their own homes. And, you know, that's why they're really good writers, because they're really comfortable just being in their own head. And that doesn't always make for really good interview conversations.
Yeah, and I was going to say too that writing is kind of, you know, it's a lonely profession. You're not really, unless you're co-writing with someone, you're kind of just alone, you know, and so you kind of tend to see things that way.
Yeah.
Well, it is a lonely profession. It is a very lonely profession, but my starting before radio was, I did science fiction conventions and mystery conventions, and I came from the audience and listening to and watching some of the authors that talked and really made sense, like the late Jack Chalker and the late Ed McBain, and they commanded the conversation, you know. And one of my favorite authors was named Robert V. Parker, and unless he knew you, and he got the chance to know me towards the latter part of his life, but he was very, very quiet, very, very sedate. He talked to his wife, and he would say, good show, or things like, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I had Ed McBain, who wouldn't shut up, and Robert B. Parker, and I was moderating, and there are both of them, because Ed McBain, of course, has written Matthew Hope and things like that. Both of them are no longer with us. Knockwood, but they were good people. And they would be wonderful human beings. Both of them were lovely men. But Ed would not shut up. I loved him. He was great, you know. By the way, Ed McBain is also Evan Hunter, who wrote The Blackboard Jungle and the script for The Birds with Hitchcock and things like that. And Robert B. Parker, of course, created B.L. Stryker and rewrote Raymond Chandler for the book Poodle Springs, and, of course, created Spencer and was consultant for Spencer for Hire. Mr. McBain, what do you think? And he would go on for 10 minutes and look over and say, Mr. Parker, what do you think? And then finally he'd say something, and then I'd go, Mr. McBain, what do you think? And it's wonderful. Go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I have there's an author friend of mine who, she lives about an hour away from me, so we do events together periodically. But she and I are total opposites. She writes amazing stories, but she is a shy introvert. And
you mean she's not going to do this show?
She would probably be like, I mean, she would. I wouldn't be surprised if she would like break out in hives if she thought she had to do a radio show, because she gets. I had to drag her to an event, and really, I mean, I shouldn't say a dragger, but I had to really do some major convincing to get her to go to an event with me here in Columbus. And the only way she would even go is the fact that, A, I was there and she knew me, and her husband came along with her as her assistant. Mm. And it was, she was scared to death the whole day. I mean, she did it, and she's gotten a little bit better about, you know, doing it as long as either I'm there or her husband is there. But that's just not natural for her. She's just very shy and she's introverted, but she writes amazing stories. And so, you know, unfortunately in the world we live in now, in the publishing world, you have to, you know, sell yourself. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, put yourself out there and your books out there and your writing, and, you know, it's very difficult if you're not willing to talk, you know, and promote yourself. I mean, it's just the facts.
Yeah, it's so necessary. So,
the publishing industry, 30 years ago, they used to stick a publicist with you, and they would be your companion for 6 months. I know when I did, and I wrote 3 books in England, and they weren't published in the U.S., they were published in England, and the publicist was like glued to me. I almost couldn't go to the bathroom without a publicist, didn't know. So it was like, yeah, I love the publicist, and was so much fun. I've got Valerie Douglas is going to join us in a minute. As soon as I give her the number again, she's doesn't have it, so I'm going to give it to her. As I said, basically, it's lovely because the publicist was my best friend. You know, it's like if you ever wanted to have a choice in life, you had the publicist who was like your best audience in the world.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. I know they did it in entertainment. They still do, I'm sure. When I worked in that, they had people the publicist would be right there. I haven't paid much attention to whether they still do it, but
no,
I
because a lot of the studios, a lot of the publishers, you know, it's like you're on your own, kid. Enjoy, unless you're James Patterson or somebody.
Well, again, I think it's a lot of that has to do with just the how much the publishing industry has changed over the years.
Yeah.
Because I mean, with the invention of the internet and, you know, indie publishing, it has totally changed the landscape. And I mean, used to, if you weren't with one of the big six, you know, you couldn't get published, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could, but nobody would ever see it except for maybe your, you know, small handful of friends. But, you know, the books were out there in the bookstore. People, you know, if you were, you know, a reader, you went to a bookstore. You didn't really have a choice. If you wanted books, you had to go to a bookstore. That was your only real access, that or a library. So it kind of focused in the marketing and, you know, the access to the books. Now there's so much wide access that it's made it difficult, a little more difficult for publicists and publishers to market those things, because they have to find more creative ways to reach their audience. It's not as easy as in many ways as it used to be, or at least
let me get Valerie to chime in on this one, because I don't want her to introduce herself. So, yeah, and Naomi will be joining us hopefully momentarily. I think this is Valerie. Are you there?
I'm here. I finally made it.
Slap, slap, slap. You've been punished enough. Go ahead. Introduce yourself, and then, you know, I think you know Patty Barrington, and of course you know Sherry Hayes. Wave, wave. Go ahead.
Hello,
Introduce yourself quickly, hello. Valerie, so that...
Hello. I'm Valerie Douglas. I'm the author of 21 books self-published and 3 still under my publisher. And I'm the administrator of the indie author group on Facebook.
7,000 members strong. She's a nice person, too. Oh, my God. She's so nice. Okay. She's nice.
What are we talking about?
No, we are talking about basically there used to have publishers that used to be so nice and publicize you and walk you through, and now it's like you're thrown to the lions.
Well, and I started out with the mid-level, so I got thrown to the lions pretty much from the get-go.
Well, you know, you're self-published. I've been self-published, and I've also been professionally published. And, I mean, you know, when you had a publicist doing all the nice things, you weren't thrown to the lions as much. Now, you know, it's like sink or swim, folks.
Well, on the mid-level, but on the mid-level, publishers like mine, and I won't give names, you pretty much were expected to do 90% of the you know, marketing. So you had to have a web page, you had to have all this stuff, and I had no clue when I started out.
Well, let me add this person to the mix, because I think Naomi Blackburn has Author CEO, and I love her. She is such an intelligent. She knows about this business. She knows about a lot of things, and I'll let her introduce herself in 1 second so we can really let the thing cook.
Okay.
Naomi, are you with us?
Hi, guys. Sorry about that. I haven't mastered the art of time differences yet.
Oh.
Well, that's okay.
Slap
time.
Wait a second. I did this with Valerie. I want to make sure everybody's fair. Slap, slap, slap. You've been slapped, okay?
Oh, yes. Yes. I am so sorry, Bennett.
I've been slapped already because Sherry's name I misspelled. So it's like, it's slapping night, you know?
Yeah, but you enjoy it.
Yes, I
know.
Yeah,
he does.
Would you introduce yourself quickly? Miss Naomi, introduce yourself very quickly, because I'd like them to know who you are and what you are and why you are. And
my name is Naomi Blackburn. I am I'm an literary business consultant with the Author CEO. And what I do is that I really consult with authors and teach authors about the business side of bringing their books to market. I am an MBA with well over a decade of experience
in
the marketing.
And she's smarter than me. I will say this in front of her and behind her. She's smarter than me.
I don't know about that.
But she's not funny.
Okay, guys, you're throwing me off. No, I have over a decade in business development and in consulting work. And on top of that, I'm a reader addict and am a Goodreads top 1% reviewer. Have been on Goodreads for about 4 years. And really look at Goodreads from a business development perspective, particularly for the author. So really, I've combined my love of the two things. So that's basically who I am in a nutshell.
Well, let me bring a topic here, because I don't know if you guys, many years ago, I used to love Sunday getting the parade out of the newspaper. And usually you'd get, and it was such an informative little news magazine that would be stuck in the Washington Post and everything else. Nowadays, they stick it in the Saturday or the Friday. Today I bought my Saturday paper, and there it was. And I just sort of, there was an amazing, they had the What America Eats annual issue of Parade. And I wanted to ask all of you this question. I mentioned this earlier to Patty and to the lovely Sherry. If you could have a famous person that you'd like to invite over for dinner, I'm not talking five or six or whatever, one person that you'd like to invite over for dinner, who would you like to invite? Naomi, let's start with you.
Judge Judy.
Okay.
I would. I would absolutely love to just sit down and talk with her, because, first of all, she did a book in the 90s that I still refer to. Well, actually, there are two. One is Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining, and which was only outdone by Beauty Face and Dumb Is Forever. And it talks about the need for women to really develop who they are as women and not to be afraid of intelligence, rather than to focus on beauty and looks and just the superficial things. But it's just a lot of her what are called Judaisms that just make me laugh. You know, I don't watch a lot of TV, but she is one that I always watch. just with some of the lines that she comes up with. So definitely it would be Judge Judy.
Patty, who do you think you'd like to invite over for dinner? You can make it lunch, okay?
Okay, I'll make it lunch. I'm kind of torn because obviously my idol is Stephen King, and I just want to ask him, how do you come up with this? But also, there's a man that I met a couple of times, and he was a comedian. I don't know how many people would know him. Sam Kinison. I know. I met him a couple times, and I just personally, he was such a sweetheart. And but he, the first time I ever saw him, I was like in pain for 3 days afterward. This man was so funny, and I think either one of those or both.
Valerie, who would you like? I'm sorry.
You're snoring now at my answer. So
no, I'm enjoying your answer. I like
it. I thought you were going. Okay, yeah, move
no,
on.
No. I have to build up. Talking to you, I have to build up oxygen.
No.
You don't take my oxygen. Okay, thank you. Okay. Valerie, what famous person would you like to invite for dinner?
All politics aside, I'd still like to invite the Obamas. I'd love to find out where they're thinking, what's going on. You know, the intelligence that's involved would be great. I mean, just to sit down and have that conversation would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, who would you like to invite?
Right now, the top person on my list would probably be Diana Gabaldon. I have watched a lot of videos. She's, for hopefully you're all aware, but she writes the Outlander series that just recently is on Stars, got turned into a TV series. But I've watched several videos with her talking about her writing process, and it just fascinates me. And she is an highly intelligent woman. She has 2 PhDs. She used to write textbooks before she sat down to decide to try to write a novel of her own. I mean, she seems to have led such a fascinating life up until now, and she's such a prolific writer. I'd have to sit down and actually count how many books she's written between all of her novels and then her short stories and her spinoffs from the series. And I think she's a very fascinating lady.
Yes, Dale, I will answer the question as well. Alive, who I would love to have dinner with is Jerry Lewis. Now, or even the 1980s, Jerry, I don't care how old, Jerry Lewis, because he's been around, he's done almost everything. You know, everything from Broadway to radio to vaudeville to film to directing and television and everything, you know. And his art of comedy, to me, is half slapstick. And when he does die, you know, either that or Mel Brooks, I would love.
Mel Brooks would be
dead,
great.
I'd love. I've had dinner with Mel Brooks. It was wonderful. Who recently died, either Joan Rivers or Robin Williams. I would love. Yeah. Now I want to tell you who the parade said, who they polled. 23% said Ellen DeGeneres. 20% said Pope Francis. 18% said Stephen King. 17% said Bill Clinton, 11% said Mark Cuban, and 10% said Beyonce Knowles. They didn't say if Jay-Z's invited, just Beyonce. Okay? Now, noting this, Pope Francis, the 20%, the Pope was the most popular invitee about people 55 and over. So that to me, I love the how they have their surveys and polls and things like that. Because the issue is, you know, it used to be so much layered with so much. Now it's like six pages, and it's like almost nothing. But let me ask you, what do you think, or who do you think is the most popular celebrity chef? I want to hear the panel before I reveal the answer here.
Bobby Flay.
Anybody jump in.
Bobby Flay.
Rachel Ray.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, Bobby Flay is probably the one that comes to mind. He seems to have TV shows all over the place nowadays.
Wait a minute. What about that guy, Fiera?
Yeah.
Guy Fiero?
Guy Fieri. Yeah.
I'm thinking
anybody
of Rachel
else?
Ray. Maybe Rachel
Ray. Rachel Ray's good, too, yeah.
Probably Julia Child, and she's like the queen of them all.
Are
we talking about?
Well, the list states here 29%, and they didn't even pick my two chefs that I would have liked. I would have liked Mario Vitale or Michael Simon, and neither one are on the list. But Rachel Ray at 29%, Gordon Ramsay, that's Hell's Kitchen, MasterChef, et cetera, at 16%.
I have to admit, I get the biggest kick out of that show.
12% is Bobby Flay, 12% is Guy Fieri, and 9% is Anthony Bourdain, who takes everybody on the Travel Channel to Saigon in the middle of winter, and where, you know, it's like, it's a bit, you know, whatever, you know, it's like, God.
I didn't realize he was a chef.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He wrote the book Kitchen Confidential, one of my favorites.
Because I thought that was more – I didn't realize that he actually, you know, was a chef. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
The other – Oh wow!
Yeah, he has judged on Iron Chef America, and he's even performed on Iron Chef America.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I thought he was just like a booty type of guy, like a former.
Oh well,
chef,
yeah, he's a chef type of guy too.
Yeah. Okay. Huh.
Now let me ask you. Since all the panel here is beautiful ladies, other than me. How many of you ladies prefer your own cooking to your spouses, partners, et cetera?
Oh, my God, me.
Yeah, my husband doesn't really cook, so definitely me if I want to be able to eat it.
Okay, true
my
story.
Husband,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
No, go ahead. When I was pregnant, I had a great pregnancy, and my husband did Hamburger Helper in the crock pot. You can't do Hamburger Helper in the crock pot. It was the only time I got sick during my pregnancy. the noodles, like, mutated. We came home from being out, and the noodles were mutated. They were so bad. From then, I knew I was going to be the chef in the family.
Wow. Yeah. There are some things that are just not meant to go in the crock pot.
My husband's vegetarian, and which is fine. And I switched over to his diet, and it turns out that was probably, as much as I love him, one of the worst things I could have done, because we didn't know that I had advanced liver disease. And unfortunately, you can't process carbohydrates if your liver's bad. So now I'm on a very specialized diet, but the cool thing is that I've introduced him to that, and it was funny because as a vegetarian, he didn't eat much vegetables. It was almost all 90% carbohydrates, soy and artificial meats and that sort of thing. And but he didn't eat very many vegetables, and now all of a sudden he's like not only eating vegetables, he makes vegetables. So now he's that, and he makes the best vegetarian chili, I have to say.
Oh wow.
Any
okay,
best.
What time
is
my dinner invitation coming? Now, but you see, I make a meat chili, and I've friends when my father died 12 years ago. The one way to get me out of my funk where I was 12 years ago, they sent me on a magical mystery tour down to see all of my friends, and everybody would have a number 10 can of tomato sauce and tomato paste, and I would make my meat chili. And I would be cooking for like 20 or 30 people and cooking this every place I went. And it was like I did it all the way from D.C. down to Florida. So I, you know, and then get flown back. But
wow.
It got me out of my blues because I was cooking my favorite dish, chili.
Huh. I didn't start cooking really. I cook for my family now, but I didn't really take that much of an interest in it until I tried Thai food. And I worked in Hollywood back in the 80s and 90s, and there used to be a place called Shandara's. And
oh God, yes.
You remember that on, well, I
oh,
was
yes.
at Capitol, so it was like right on Cahuenga there. And I went in, and you know, it was all, I mean, it was standing room only. And I would go in and I'd say, please, please, please give me your recipe for spicy fried rice, please, please. And they were like, oh no, we don't give that to anyone. And strangely enough, my sister, who is also at times my co-author, went in one Christmas, I think it was like around 93, and she went in to have lunch there with someone, one of her co-workers, and they had the recipe book, and they were selling it, a recipe book from Shandara's. And she was like, oh my God. So she bought it for me for Christmas, and I'll try this. I started making, I'm now the queen of Thai food. So,
okay, what time is dinner?
Hey, anytime, you're in LA, right?
I'm in D.C., but I'll travel.
Are you really? No.
Yes, I'm in the D.C. area. It's thunderstorming outside, by the way.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you guys are supposed to have some nasty storms coming through.
It's already got. I've already had the first wave, and the second and third are coming. I'm watching. I had watched the Weather Channel before I got online and on air. So it's like, yeah, it's so wonderful.
Wow.
Yes,
I thought you had a 714 phone number.
No. I have a 214.
Okay.
I'm 8 miles from the D.C. border, and when you talk to somebody. And they say, I usually say, I'm from D.C., and usually if you get somebody, I'm not saying they're stupid. Please don't misinterpret my term here. But they come up to me and they say, if you say Maryland, they're going, isn't that near Montana? And I say, no, it's near Virginia. Yeah, this is true. But they say, you say from D.C., do you know Barack and Michelle? I say, oh, yes, I go to the garden, and Michelle gives me a couple of carrots from the garden, you know. So, you know, but you say D.C., and they think that you know the White House, or,
right.
Or you must be at the Capitol. I live 8 miles from D.C. You know, if you go 8 miles straight, you hit D.C., the D.C. line, not the Capitol, the D.C. line. So I can say, in all honesty, I'm 8 miles from D.C., yes.
Wow.
I can see the White House from my house. Oh, my God. I'm doing Sarah Palin.
Well, you know what? If you're ever out here, the invitation stands.
I'm sorry?
I said, if you're
I'm
ever
sorry,
out here,
talking.
The invitation stands. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I no. Hey, as long as you don't mind me going to Pink's once, I got to go to Pink's.
No. Yeah.
I got to go to Pink's and get a dog. I mean, it's yeah. I can say I went to L.A. and went to Pink's.
That's right.
And a friend of mine said, Pink's, what is that? And I said, you got to go there and... It's Nirvana for hot dogs, and it's like Pink's.
Yeah, it is Pink's.
And
yeah.
Okay. I'm not talking In-N-Out Burger. I'm talking.
No.
Pink's.
Yeah, I know Pink's.
Oh yeah, I'm a closet foodie, folks. If you can't tell, yes, I like Food Network. You know, I told friends know me very well. I don't care who wins the the football game or the baseball game. Just tell me who wins Iron Chef America. tell me who wins Chopped. You know, oh, yeah, you know, or the Food Fighter. Oh, yeah, I'm into it. It's like, yeah, you know, because it's only a half an hour or even an hour or two or whatever, and I'm, you know, fine, you know. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, but he sautés so well. You know, somebody's yelling, and it's like, he sacked the quarterback. Okay, that's nice. But he look how he sauteed, and look at that fire going up on that. Oh, yeah, okay. You know, I'm watching Chopped earlier today, and they're making...
I don't even have cable.
Okay,
yeah,
well...
I don't either.
Well, I'm just, you know, Food Fighters is on NBC, and I'm not promoting them, but... You know, it's got Adam Richman from Man vs. Food with a chef that basically is a home cook, and then they invite people like Kat Cora and Duff Goldman and other people that you know from all the other food shows
right.
to battle this person making their own recipes.
Wow.
So I'm like, yeah, baby, oh, yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you guys want to invite me over, don't turn on the football game. Turn on Food Network.
We'll eat and we'll watch it.
I'll invite you over for my husband's vegetarian chili.
I will come. I will come.
You have to try it because it's really actually very good.
A friend of mine makes chili with barley, and I was so impressed. Oh, yeah, and I was like, this is barley? Oh, no, it didn't taste like barley. It really didn't.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And I don't know what they did or how they did it. Oh, God, yes, it was so good. So
now, Bennett, now I soak a tailgate during football season.
Mm-hmm.
And how would that work if I invited you over because I cook up a storm during it? So how would that work out? How would that handle or how would that work out if you don't like football, but I have the food.
I would be the one sitting and helping clean up while while the game is on. I would help clean up and just be eating. You know, it's like, oh, there's leftover chips. Yes. Oh, with dip. Great.
You've seen some of my menus. You've seen some of my menus for the Bears game that I throw on.
Yes,
Facebook.
I have. Let's say it this way. If the Redskins were playing, I would still wear my Redskins shirt and go to the game and go, yeah, the Skins are playing. Now, that brings me up to the point here. Yes, I'm going to mention it. The Washington Redskins. Okay? And I mention it for a reason. Because what do you ladies think about what's happening with the Washington Redskins? I think it's nuts.
You heard my answer last night.
But most people missed it. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's nuts. I agree with you. As I said last night, you know, if you're looking for a word that is going to be offensive to someone, anyone, you might as well basically take away 50% of the English language because there are so many words that could be potentially offensive or derogatory or whatever to someone. And as I said last night, I'm 37 years old. I've never heard anyone use the term redskin as a derogatory term in my lifetime.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't think it was meant to be really derogatory because that's their mascot.
Well,
you know,
the thing is it was to that term was derogatory 200 years ago.
Yeah, but I think
it's
they were
not,
kind of.
Yeah, and it's
but
not used that way now.
Everybody has chimed in that they're not going to use the name, and I think it's a little much. It's a little crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think what you're hearing on. Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. I was going to say that.
Patty, go ahead. I think she'll wait.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. I'm just listening to everyone else.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that what you're hearing, and I kind of feel the same way, is that when I watch football, I watch football. I don't watch football for politics. I don't watch football for political commentary. I watch it to watch the game. And there's too much of that coming into the game. And it's really, I know for people that I talk to, they're actually getting really angry with it, because it's kind of what you guys are saying, that, you have polls that have been done with Native Americans that they don't find it offensive, and that this is coming from one group of people. So, you know, to me,
the one group of people was a Native American grandmother who wanted to give her children something, her children and grandchildren something to be proud of, and not necessarily the fact that, you know, somebody's doing the tomahawk chop.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but they should just take a potato, an Idaho potato, a red skin potato, and use that as the symbol. So that way they don't have to, it's still the Washington Redskins. Yeah. And you can't fight that, because then it's a red skin potato, and they can't say, oh, that's derogatory, because then change the potato name. Go to Idaho and change the potato name. You can't do that, you know. So, you know, then they can't really say anything, and they can just leave to die. And then, of course, go back to the brave symbol, that, you know, and all the papers can't say anything, because then you're only symbolizing a potato. You're still calling it the Washington Redskins, and, you know, and nobody can then fight it. Well, they can fight
I just think the political correctness in general has kind of, we've taken it, there's people who have just taken it too far, and this is just one example of that. I mean, if
right.
it keeps getting pushed in the direction that some people seem to want to take it, people are going to be afraid to say anything, period. They're going to be afraid to voice their opinions, because in fear that it's not going to be, you know, politically correct, and they're going to be ostracized or sued or something like that. I mean, I don't know. There's polite, but to me, polite is the golden rule, at least. I don't even know if they teach that in school anymore.
They don't teach
it
anymore.
When I was growing up, it was always, you know, do unto others what you would have them do unto you. I don't understand why we can't stick to that. I mean, if you're, no matter what you're saying or what you're doing, as long as you hold to that rule, should be pretty okay. Because if it's not something you would want somebody doing to you, then you shouldn't be doing it to them.
Right.
Makes logical
sense. Other words, if they're going to take offense over the fact that you're going to call them a redskin, and they think that that's not necessarily polite term, it's okay.
We have a comment from John here. Let me give it to you. Why are you guys dwelling on this? We should be talking about something else, like movies or something. Thank you, John. This is an important topic, and it is in the spectrum of media these days. This is what the show's about, and I'm not a football fan. I admit that freely, but it is my home team. I'm guilty as charged, and yes, I know that the other Washington team, he mentioned this, called the Bullets. The Baltimore Bullets, when they moved to Washington, they had to change it from the Washington Bullets to the Washington Wizards. Makes no sense.
I
don't name them, folks. I'm not in charge. I don't know. I mean,
I don't think when they named them that, I don't think they had the intent of insulting anyone. You know,
I don't think they did either.
I really don't think so. It's like the Braves. I just kind of, you know,
yeah.
They picked that
minority,
because they liked that mascot. You know, they liked that image. And I don't, maybe the term, but itself, but I don't know if the intent was to you know, connotate something negative. I think they were just...
Well, why would you? If you're making a mascot, if you're holding
yeah.
up to be cheered and, you know,
yeah.
lifted up, why would you name it... Why
something
would you have a
yeah.
name for it if you were meaning it to be derogatory?
Yeah. I don't...
It,
well,
it doesn't make sense.
At the time period that they named the team, they were also running movies that depicted the Cowboys and the Indians, and the Cowboys were pretty much slaughtering the Indians.
Yeah.
So,
but I don't
and
know.
Of course,
I
that wasn't necessarily politically or even historically correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But to bring it back to maybe a writing point of view, one of the things that was coming up recently over the last year or so was that there was a bit of a push on for trying to find more diversity in children's books, because what they were seeing was they weren't seeing a lot of African-American children in children's books, and they weren't seeing a lot of gay people being treated respectfully or dealt with, you know, in children's books. So there was a little bit of that kind of vibe going on, is that people were trying to talk about the, you know, necessity for diversity, and people weren't necessarily there was also a problem with, in some cases, with some of the cons that were where, for example, women or minorities were actually finding themselves being talked over by some of the more politically correct people, as far as long as they were white and male, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, you know, so there's a whole dynamic that's been going on there, and we've been seeing a lot of that in the country too, where there's a pushback against the political correctness because, you know, we all, you know, it's like we can't say anything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but I don't know that that's entirely true. I mean, I know that in fantasy, how often do you see African-American characters or, you know, anybody that of color?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
I can't answer that question because I don't really read that that genre. I mean, I
right.
you know, I write romance, and that's what I read. And I will say that I have noticed in recent years that there has been a large increase in diversity in romance. I mean, you see, you know, interracial romance, you have, you know, MM romance and FF romance.
The romance market is definitely much more accepting.
Yeah.
It's a lot more diverse. I just don't know if the rest of the genres have caught up yet, but I'm sure, you know, romance is pretty much, I mean, it's been the forefront for a lot of, you know, a lot of book marketing and stuff, because it is a huge chunk of the market. So I think since the romance industry has really kind of evolved over the last, you know, like I said, five years.
There's
or
a
so
lot
to
of
kind
African
of
American novels lately and Latino novels. So they have they're finding the niche because in.
Yeah.
New York, and since I just came back from New York last week, I was in New Jersey, but the thing is you have to go through New York. You go to a bookstore, and there is a whole 12 shelves or whatever in a bookstore basically devoted to African-American novels, and then right on the other side is Latina novels. And I'm not talking Spanish language. I am talking... I'm not trying to sound negative, or I don't want to get hate mail, but Latina novels, as in the Latins or however you want to consider it, they don't do Jews yet. I'm waiting for the Jewish romance. Who's going to write a Jewish romance? Then we'll be good. No, all kidding aside, but, you know, they do, they are focusing, there is, a 12 shelves of black, African-American, black, whatever you want to call it, novels. I'm not, you know, romance and things like that. That's a nice shelf. I mean, that's, you're not talking, even you go to Hudson News in the, and I'm not trying to promote them, but you go to Penn Station, you go to Hudson News. Yes, they have a section that says African-American literature. They don't have Up from Slavery, no. They don't have Native, they may have Native Salt, I didn't see it. But, you know, they have a stack of Who Dat or some of the other ones that are there. And it is, you know, a lot of the multicultural people And some of them are fascinating. Some of them are erotica. Some of them aren't. By the way, Jolie Dupree, I love you dearly, and you should put your novel should be there. But I'm prejudiced. I love Jolie. She's wonderful.
When I first started writing science fiction, when I first started writing a few years ago, one thing I noticed, I was like, well, there are no, you know, black science fiction writers. And I was so happy I started looking into it. In the last few years, the science fiction has just blossomed into that. I love it so much. I was so excited because I was like, I would love to read that. And I was like, there's, you know, there were very few. And I think in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, that has really blown up, you know, for the diversified writers.
One of the few black science fiction writers who I loved, and she's no longer with us, Octavia Butler. She was such a wonderful lady. She and Marion Zimmer Bradley can do almost anything they wanted. And they'd have my attention.
Marion Zimmer Bradley just had some problems, though.
Marion Zimmer Bradley is no longer with us. I wish she was still here. But I love Marion.
Yeah.
Marion was a sweetheart. Marion was so wonderful because Marion looked like a grandma. And I was on a panel with her at a science fiction convention once, and I said, and was talking to her, and I knew I was a guest, and I didn't know who she was. And we're talking, we're having a lovely discussion, and Dave Nelson, who was moderating the panel, said, I said, ma'am, we're going to be starting through. And she said, well, I'm on the panel. And she circled my name and was so thrilled to know who I was. And she takes my arm and whispers in my ear, and she says, I'd like to talk to you later when you're done after the panel. And I'm like, Marion Zimmer Bradley wants to talk to me. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm up, you know. And my voice got higher. I was like, sounding like I was on helium. And it was like, I turned into a fangirl. So at the end, everybody's coming up to Marion, and a few people are coming up to me. And she says, are you the same Bennett Pomerance that wrote Night of the Shylock in Power Star magazine? I said, yes, ma'am. Did you read it? And she says, yes. And I thought it was good. And I remember Jean Spicer Evans looked at me and she says, if she would have said it was excellent, we'd have to take a crowbar and pry you out of the moon, Bennett. The feet did not touch the ground. It was like Marion Zimmer Bradley.
What a sweet story. I love it.
I had made it. We were at John Conn at Johns Hopkins. And, I mean, but Marion Zimmer Bradley, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. Yes, I know it was a fanboy story. I know I'm a big fanboy, but it was so nice. God, and that was 20 years ago
of
my life.
I wish I had gotten a chance to meet Anne McCaffrey. That would have been great, too.
Well, Anne McCaffrey was like, Anne McCaffrey was at, I think, the second or third Balticon as guest. And this is when they were doing handbills, and they still had not a Xerox machine, but one of those, you typed it on the master, and then you could run off a program. I forgot what you call it, you know. And Anne was helping. Anne wanted to help. And I said, I'm looking for Anne McCaffrey. She says, I'm her. I'm like, okay. And she says, you're Bennett? I said, yeah, here, let me start you working here. And I was working next to Anne McCaffrey, and we were running off the program bills. You know, now they do a fancy, dancy, schmancy book, and, you know, it's like with color inserts and comics and whatever. Then it was a handbill. But I'm working next to Anne McCaffrey. I'm like, oh, my God, can I, whatever. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, some people, Anne and Ray Bradbury and other people, were real. They didn't put on airs. Today's writer, the bigger writers are like, I'm sorry, you know, it's like they think they're superstars, you know. They got to come down to earth every once in a while.
Bennett, and I must take leave of you. I have some engagements that I have to go take care of.
Well,
so
and before
to,
you do, why don't you give them a little how they can get a hold of you and everything else? Because I want to, then I can take a break and give the World of Ink and my things after, so that way we can. But let them how they can get a hold of you, Patty.
Okay. The Breed Chronicles Book 1 is on Amazon. You just have to look it up either under P.I. Barrington or The Breed, B-R-E-D-E Chronicles. And that book is everywhere. The publisher had such amazing distribution. It's on Kobo. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon everywhere in the world. There's so many places. You just have to look for it. I'm on Facebook, P.I. Barrington. And I'm on Twitter, at P.I. Barrington, all caps. So anyone wants
and
to
And you will
me?
Be on Anything Goes with just me alone on the 17th. Oh, my
on
God, just
17th.
You and I for 30 minutes.
That's it, baby. It's a date.
It's set in soft peat, so it's all right.
All right. I will take my leave of you. Thank you, ladies, for letting me join in. And thank you, Bennett. I will see you on the 17th.
Thank you, darling. I'll see you on the 17th of October. Let me do my homework because I'll have people mad. Thank you, Patty. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Let me talk a little about the World of Ink Network, who basically are the powers that be, and they're great people. And if you don't know who they are really do a lot of great shows. Tomorrow, Cassandra Dane has at 12 noon has the, well, she excuse me, 2 o'clock, she has the Edge show. The Writing Mama, which is Virginia Grenier, on the 8th has a show at 12 noon with the authors of Gates of Atlantis. On the 9th, we have I love this woman, Marcia Casper Cook. A Good Story is a Good Story, and that will be at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard. And on the 10th, we'll have the Empowerment Show. And on the 11th, Fran Lewis is going to have a book discussion, and I know I'm going to mess up this guy's name, Steve Shirkus. And if I mess it up, Fran, I'm sorry. Please forgive me now. Okay. Now, that's the World of Ink, because they are good people, and they will, of course, be, I will be doing Any Which Way But Loose with them, and that will be, I'll get to that in a minute, but I'll be getting that on the 20th for my next show with them, but that's beside the point. I will be out of town next week, so there is no Anything Goes this Friday. There is no legal show on Monday, because I will have shows on the 17th, the 19th, and the 20th. Rachel will be with me on the 17th with Let's Talk, Rachel Thompson, the Huffington Post columnist. The 19th, I have Mark David Gerson. By the way, those who want to speak to Michelle Villery on the 12th, she will be rescheduled. And yes, people, I am of the Jewish persuasion, so on September 26th and October 3rd, I will be off for the Jewish High Holy Days. Just the Anything Goes shows. The other shows will be on as they are. So I just want to make sure that you know, it's not that I'm leaving you. And by the way, thank you all for sending letters and cards and seeing that I'm still alive and not having another heart attack and everything else. So you guys are too good to me. I thank you, all my fans and all the people. So I wanted to make sure that I'd done my homework. I think I've done all my homework. Okay. Okay. Let me
Take
ask. Yeah, I gotta get a second. Yeah, get a breath. I got a breath. Okay, I got a good breath. Okay, let me ask a very simple question. Okay, everybody has called this year the year that laughter has died. David Brenner, Sid Caesar, Robin Williams, and now Joan Rivers. Do you agree or disagree?
It's died? No. I mean,
yeah,
there's still humor in the world.
Well, all the great comedians are going, you know. Now, if Jerry Lewis or Mel Brooks dies this year, I'm going to really cry.
But there's a whole new breed of comedians coming up, and we don't know who's going to turn into the next Robin Williams or the next Joan Rivers.
I hate to say it, Robin Williams, and I'm not trying to be rude, Robin Williams was like Haley's Comet.
There won't be another one.
Not like Robin Williams.
No.
Adam Sandler comes good, but no, he's no Robin Williams. You know.
Yeah. I just don't see where the talent, you know, with some of the comedians that are out there, that they have the power,
zaniness?
The power that was behind Robin Williams, their aura, or Joan Rivers, just the aura that was behind them. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they both were what I call hungry. It's like an author that just... Cassandra Dana is a perfect example of an author like that. She writes for the sake of writing. She keeps putting out input. Robin Williams, Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers said in her movie, A Piece of Work, Joan Rivers' Piece of Work, that she can't stand an empty appointment book. She's got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have lost. I'm not saying comedians these days, if it's, you know, if they're not booked and they don't work for a month or two, they don't care. Whereas these people were driven.
Yeah.
I was watching Robin Williams on the Inside the Actor's Studio. He was on. It was like a light bulb. But, of course, also Maura Wilson said when she was a child, Robin was wonderful. When she was an adult, he didn't know how to talk to her because he was a shy man inside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joan, I don't know. There are things, you know. Everybody from Juliana Rancic to Kelly Osbourne said that she was a lovely person. If you would do something, she would go after him, you know.
I listened to a number of comics, though, that were coming up, and it was funny because they used to say how she would go out of her way to make them comfortable or to know what they were doing in their career, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, that's where her comfort level was being around other comics. And, you know, if you look at the roasts that she did and things like that, it was all for comics. But I think that she was such a master in her career. I mean, if you think about it, they said that she was a comic for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she was as popular in her early days as she was in her later days. So it's always like
I hate to disagree with you, but after she had her talk show, she was dead because Carson had blackballed her because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had went to Fox with the show, and
right.
And she was due for 6 months, basically, after she lost her show, she had nothing. And, you know, she had to earn her way back, which I said she was hungry.
But think about it. You know, after all of that, after she had that fallout with Carson,
mm-hmm.
She figured out how to rebrand herself and how to come back and not really lose who exactly she was. So she learned how to, she figured out how to rebrand herself. You know, it's funny. I was listening to somebody, another person who was talking about, who was much younger than me. I think she's in her 20s. And she, you know, where I know the Joan Rivers from, you know, the roasts, the comedy roasts and different things like that and the talk shows or whatever. She knew of Joan Rivers from Fashion Police or whatever that show was called that she was on with her daughter and how much she loved that show. So it's like she was always recreating or always keeping herself out in front, you know, and that's pretty good, you know. And the other thing is that they were talking about that it was different than like Phyllis Diller or other female comedians of her time or of that time, was that she had managed to really keep a grace about her. Now, I've never considered her that way, but okay.
but a grace and a beauty, where with the female comedians during the time that she was coming up, it was always about, you know, Phyllis Diller with the flowers or Joanne Worley or whatever. You know, it was about the almost self-deprecating of their image. And so, and that she would never do that. So I found that very interesting.
Well, I will tell you, I tried to find a copy of Joan Rivers' only film that she directed, and I cannot. It's available overseas or by Amazon on demand or whatever, but you can't buy a DVD copy of Billy Crystal in a movie called Rabbit Test about the Joan Rivers film about the only pregnant man. Well, this is before Arnold Schwarzenegger did Junior, but that's beside the point.
And also before there was a pregnant man, but of course he was, you know, cross-gendered, but, you know, anyway.
But let me ask one other question, because this is news, but not news here. What do you think of the new cast of The View? Do you think The View is going down the toilet, or do you think it's going to survive, you think?
I never watch it, so I don't know. I don't.
Well,
I stopped watching it a long time ago. I don't even know who the new cast is.
Rosie Perez. Rosie O'Donnell, Whoopi Goldberg, and Nicole Wallace, who's a political correspondent. What scares me is that it's like, with the election coming up in 2 years, you're going to need a political correspondent. So you put one on the panel, which is a smart move. I just wish they'd bring on Elizabeth Hasselbeck and her and Rosie go after it. Clause. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but then you don't get anything. But then you don't have a decent conversation, you know. I actually stopped watching it because it had started becoming so politically oriented in one direction, and that I just stopped watching it because I got frustrated. I like the fact that it's now becoming more diverse. It's, you know, I mean, you got Rosie Perez and you got Whoopi Goldberg and you've got some people that are actually a little bit that cross the spectrum, and I think that's a whole heck of a lot more healthy than having it go one way or the other, because for a while there it was like Whoopi and everybody else. I, you know, and I'm still ticked off at What's-Her-Dame for anti, you know, virus or anti...
Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jenny, you mean Mrs. Donnie Wahlberg. Let's make sure we got it.
Yeah, she's Mrs. Donnie Wahlberg right now, but, you know, she was so anti, you know, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, my God, and she, you know, you see the measles epidemics and you see the mumps epidemics, which is hitting my area pretty heavily, and all of it because people wouldn't get their, you know, booster shots. It's like, it's ridiculous. But she's, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, the whole anti-science thing was like, wow.
Well, I understand that, and she had a child that she, you know, she's a mother first, and she tries to be. Now, Sherry Shepherd, of course, everything was supposedly wonderful and fine, and then, of course, Shepherd is divorcing her husband because of cruelty and abuse. I don't know how much of that is hype and how much of that is real, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But Sherry,
you know,
Shepherd is going to be doing Broadway, playing the evil stepmother in Cinderella. Oh my God, the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, taking over from Fran Drescher.
So I wonder if she was really fired then, or if she wanted out of her contract, and this was a way to get her out. That she found something that fast.
Well,
you know?
Well, she's an actress, you know, I
right.
don't mean this as to down actresses, but they're constantly, it's like there are some actors and actresses that they go from one film to the next to the next, and sometimes you may not see them for 2 or 3 years, but they're working constantly. They're doing X film, then they go to Y film, then they go to Z film, and sometimes, of course, with all the cutting or special effects or whatever.
Oh, they wind up on Dancing with the Stars.
Please, don't even get me started on Dancing with the Stars. Even though I
You're
do like the new judge, she's,
I mean,
I'm sorry.
That isn't a goal of yours.
Oh no, I will watch it. I got 2 left feet. I know what I got. I mean, but Dancing with the Stars is a beautiful show. It really is. It at least shows culture and art and things like that. But when you're doing the tango to the Muppet theme, a little much. It's time to meet the Muppet. I'm like, as a tango? No. You know, if you were doing something to Bolero, fine, but the tango to the Muppet theme, a little much. No. What was it? She was doing the waltz to the Brady Bunch theme, and Florence Henderson had the Brady Bunch theme, and doing the waltz to it. I'm like, please, dear Lord, here's the story. And, you know, they didn't even slow it down. They kept it almost the original tempo of the original song. I was like, you know, I don't mind if you're going to do a quick step and you're doing Footloose. That's fine. But if you're doing something like the Muppet theme and you're doing the tango, no, please, let's... Sometimes I think Dancing with the Stars is beautiful. And sometimes it's like, why are you doing this? Now, there were some beautiful... cute things. I mean, Elizabeth Berkley was on, I think, last season or season before last, and she played Jesse Spano the time that she took pep pills and all into a dance number. That was cute. That was funny, but, you know, and I love Cloris Leachman as an actress, but, I mean, you let Toni Braxton go before you let Cloris Leachman go, and Cloris was totally mucking up. Then it was almost a popularity contest and not, you know, it wasn't really a dance competition. It was a popularity contest, which...
Yeah, but I thought she was a professional dancer. Didn't she start off as a professional dancer?
In, say, 1940s, but we're not talking, you know, she was like 78, 80 years old when she did Dancing with the Stars, you know?
Yeah, but,
there's a lot, you know.
Sometimes those moves just don't go away there.
Well, they had Bill Engvall, who of course had the Bill Engvall show and part of the Blue Collar Tour, and he was dancing with a chick that was like, he's like 63 and the chick is like 25. It's like watching a man dance with his granddaughter, you know, but, and
I would have watched that.
Oh, well, he was on. You could still, I think, see it on ABC On Demand somewhere. But he did the Lone Ranger theme. I forgot what number he did it to, but he did the Lone Ranger theme, and he's wearing a Lone Ranger outfit almost, and she has a little headdress band. Yeah, talking about the Redskins again. No.
And you're still looking at it going, oh, my God, that's just so wrong.
Yes, it's like, yeah. And you're hearing the William Tell Overture, which is fine, but if you're going from the first or second movement, that's fine. We're talking the movement, of course. You know, it's like all he's missing is a horse. You know, all he's missing is a horse, folks. I mean, you know, come on. And it's like, please, dear Lord, let this be over quickly. I don't want to hear. I'm having pain watching this. And they let him go that night. I was like, thank you, Lord. Please, thank you, Lord. I mean, I like Dancing with the Stars, but there are times it's like, if you're going to do a good classical presentation, fine, use music. But if you're going to do a piece of music, at least bring it down to a classical level, you know. If you're doing a song to Kiss's Beth, that's beautiful. If you're doing it to Strutter, no, let's miss that one. Thank you. Unless you're doing a quick step and you could do it to Strutter, that's great. But I don't think you could.
Bennett, you are making me very happy that when I have my TV on, usually it is for reruns of The Big Bang Theory, and I have a book that I'm reading at the same time, and I'm just have the TV on for background noise.
You're making me...
Well, at least the Big Bang Theory is intelligent.
Well, you have to understand, TV to me will always be, and I have them on DVD, thank God, MASH, all 11 seasons, on DVD. Because every time you watch a show, I was watching the Houdini movie they had on the History Channel. And the first night, they let a lot of it go through, and you had like 10 minutes, 5 minutes or 10 minutes of commercials, it seemed like. The second night, every 7 minutes, they stopped, and there were 15 minutes of commercials between, or 10-15 minutes of commercials between each sort of break, and it really, to me, I didn't like it too much with the second one. I'm waiting till it's on DVD. I can watch the whole thing. You see, I have Mission Impossible, the classic show. I also have the movies, but that's beside the point. MacGyver, the classic show. Man from U.N.C.L.E., mm-hmm. MASH, It Takes a Thief, Hawaii 5-0.
Why don't you just watch
I Spy. But you have to understand, today they cut it to holy ribbons. And I can't stand that. I really don't. I would rather watch a show, I would rather pay a couple of dollars more and have maybe 3 minutes of commercials before the show starts and 3 minutes of commercials before the denouement, before the ending. You know, give me 5 minutes or 6 minutes of commercials, and book it. Now, a normal show, let's say NCIS, is 41 minutes, okay? Man from U.N.C.L.E., the original one, both, of course, had David McCallum, is 51 minutes, okay?
Mm.
Whereas they put 19 minutes of commercials in an NCIS episode. Okay.
And then on top of that, they also drop in all of the – now, it's not so much with NCIS, but some of the other programs. They drop in all the endorsement stuff, so you see the –
Well, that's included
the,
in the 19 minutes. That's included in the 19 minutes.
Oh, my
but
God.
But what annoys
Rizzoli
me is you got 19 minutes of commercials. Now – I hate to say it. That's why I have a lot of things. Some people will say to me, why do you have a lot of DVDs? I have a lot of DVDs because in those 19 minutes, I could be watching almost another show.
Right.
I think what she was talking about with the endorsements or whatever –
uh-huh.
And this is what really is starting to get me is that, and Rizzoli and Isles is her. In fact, Rizzoli and Isles just officially lost DVR status on my TV because they'll do the product in the show. So like mm-hmm. they'll have Maura Isles running in her
Gucci's or whatever. Yeah.
God, what are those, the foot inserts?
Jimmy Choo's?
No, the shoe inserts, to, like, cushion the foot.
Dr. Scholl's.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr.
Scholl's inserts. They'll have that as part of the storyline.
Well, what annoys me, did any of you see Man of Steel, the last Superman movie?
No.
I'll be glad. The big first kryptonite battle in Smallville, Clark or Superman basically beats them up at a 7-Eleven. They break through a 7-Eleven and blow up a Slurpee machine and everything else, okay? The second alien attack is in front of Sears, and they do a wide shot so you see the word Sears above Christopher Maloney, who plays the Colonel and the Kryptonian. I mean, it's like they're doing...
That's not nearly as bad. Another reason why I stopped watching The View was because they would literally take time out of the middle of the show and do this supposed Sherry Shows thing, and it would be one straight 5 or 10 minutes of nothing but this, here we recommend this product we recommend.
But they would give that to the audience so that way, basically you're giving it to the audience, so that way, yeah, you know, the company
and they'd
gets
extol the virtues, yeah, and it would be like, oh, and they, you know, they lift up this box and this is our other, you know, and it's like, and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, you know, this is supposed to be a talk show, and I also want to know, why in the world does a talk show have to take a break and start running reruns in the summertime? It's a talk show.
Because too many people do other things like, okay, okay, Aisha Tyler has stand-up dates, so she'll do stand-up, usually on the weekends.
But if you talk to the folks who do Jeopardy or something like that, they do all of those shows in one day. That still leaves the entire rest of the week for them to do anything they want.
Well, The View and The Talk and The Chew do 4 days, and they double up on the Friday show or they double up on the Monday show.
Right.
Why do they have repeats? Because basically they book them for 13 weeks of real shows, and then the rest are all usually scattered or whatever, or 20 weeks or whatever, so they could do it. Now, I understand what
exactly.
You're saying about repeats. I know, but it's also how they can do, you know, they can do that. I don't know why. I can't tell you. I mean, The Talk and The View and The Chew and Queen Latifah and all, and Rachel Ray, all of them do 25 weeks or what, 25 weeks, and then, you know, that's it, you know. And if it's a week, if it's a daily show, they'll do 70 episodes or 80 episodes, which is basically, what, about 14 weeks, 15 weeks of shows? So they have
uh-huh.
other things.
Right.
Now, sometimes they'll do is they'll tape two or three shows in a day, like on Rachel Ray or something. But with all the camera setups and all, I mean, Rachel Ray used to be, hi, show her in the kitchen, da 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 da. And Rachel Ray has gotten away from being a cooking show. And I don't mind having a chef or even, not even just a chef, even an actor cooking with her. But now it's gotten to so much fashion. And it's like, mm-hmm. I used to enjoy watching Rachel Ray at the cooking show, not the 30-minute meals. But I used to enjoy watching Rachel because it was so much fun. Now it's like, oh, yes, well, look at the, let's see how much that bag costs or whatever, and it's from Target. Which one is cheaper? We can get you a cheap deal, the same fashion you'd see at the Oscars. Who cares? For me, anyway, I'm a guy. You know, I don't care. You know, except watching these women parade out in swimsuits and going, I'm a guy.
That's a guy.
I'm allowed. Yeah, she's in a swimsuit. Nice swimsuit. Yeah, baby.
And I'd really like to see some recipes that I can, you know, I'm on a really restricted diet, but I can fiddle with some stuff. But you know, but when I watch a cooking show and I don't see any cooking, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yes, how do you wallpaper your house or whatever, yes. Or the
right.
woman that they have a person that organizes everything, and this woman is in a space about the size of a closet, and he shows how that she starts with everything in a mess, and he shows how that they put a Murphy bed in, and da-da-da. I'm like, that's nice. Who cares? That's why I'd rather watch Iron Chef America. I know what I'm getting. Chopped. I know what I'm getting. I'm not getting fashion reports. It's not the fashion police. It's not XYZ. It's, yeah, come on, Bobby Flay against something, or beat Bobby Flay or whatever. You're getting cooking. You know, a lot of times they won't give you the recipe. Now, if you go to foodnetwork.com, sometimes you'll find the recipe. But the funny thing also, which annoyed me too, they had a show, there's a show called The Chew. Okay?
Yeah.
It was originally offered to Food Network. And Food Network said, and I quote, they said, it'll never work because a daily show about cooking will never sell. They went to ABC. It costs less than a soap opera. And it's a hit.
Yeah.
And
what,
now,
what is The Chew? Is that the one on...
The Chew has Mario Vitale, Michael Simon, Carla Hall, who was on Top Chef, Daphne Oz, that's Dr. Oz's daughter, who's a nutritionist and whatever, and it has Clinton Kelly from Yes, Say Yes to the Dress. As basically, he's glorified host.
Okay.
Now, do I like the show? Oh, yeah, I think it's a great show. But the thing is, now they're doing a show where they get some of the chefs from Food Network and put them together on a weekly show called The Kitchen, which has Sonny Anderson, Iron Chef Robert Zakarian, Sandwich King Jeff Morrow, pastry chef and all-around cook Katie Lee, and don't ask me to pronounce her name. I know her first name is Marcella. She's cooking Spanish style or whatever, so it's like, yeah, you know, you get your Latin audience too, if you know what I mean. I'm not trying to sound prejudiced, but that's why she's there. You know, it's for Latin cuisine and things like that. And
so
the kitchen is a...
It,
they're doing all just cooking. They're doing different things or, well, Zakarian makes a...
The Chew, they do the same thing.
They have a celebrity guest that comes in. You know, they've had everybody from Olivia Newton-John to whatever, and they talk about food issues. They talk about, they sit around the table, they talk about food issues, then they show how they're going to make a steak or how they're going to do this or how do you make gazpacho or whatever for an hour. And you have six or seven good recipes. And you're sitting there watching, going, "Yeah," and you're cooking with Iron Chef Michael Simon. Oh yeah, baby, or Mario Vitale. It's like, yeah, it's like getting a cooking lesson from Mario Vitale. Yes, he cooks a little faster than I do, but still, it's like Mario Vitale. Oh yeah. Sorry, I am prejudiced. Give me the ponytail and the clogs and I'm good, you know, and the shorts. Michael Simon, of course, is my hero, but don't tell nobody.
I have a really hard time with the cooking shows because it's like, I don't know, I just, it's like, you know what, just give me the recipe and let me go in the kitchen. You know, I have a hard time with the patience of sitting there watching the food being prepared. It's like, you know what, just let me go at it. Let me get in the kitchen. I've been cooking since I was, you know, 11, 12 years old. Let me just play with it. So
I know what I'm buying you for December seasonal holiday this year. I'm buying you a Chew cookbook. So, yeah, so you know what you're getting. You'll forget about it later. And, yeah, you've got witnesses. You've got about 10,000 witnesses that will be listening and going, yeah, he knows what he's going to get you for the December seasonal holiday.
So when you come in, you'll know what I'll be making. Here, Neil, no hint.
Let's say it this way. I just made some Bloody Mary shrimp for dinner. So, oh, yeah,
ooh,
it was so good.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I tend to adapt recipes because I have problems with my kidneys and things like that. And shrimp is good, but, you know, I made a Bloody Mary shrimp. And, oh, yeah, it was like a ceviche. Oh, yeah, I use fancy-dancy cooking language now, so you guys can get a thrill.
Well, that's good with all the cooking shows that you're watching that you're, you know, learning from.
Oh,
them
yeah.
And, you know,
I got a new vernacular, and people go, but people that know me know I can say these things. Somebody who doesn't know me goes, what's a ceviche? Who? What is that? Oh, okay. That means you don't cook it. You just put it in lime juice or tomato juice, and you let it soak in. Mm. Oh, because my mother, I was having lunch with my mother, and my mother was saying, what's a ceviche? So I know. It's like, yeah, how did you learn how to do that? I watched Michael Simon do it on The Chew. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I Yeah, I do like to cook. I do love to cook. And I remember Paula Deen. Yes, she has her own cooking network now. The Paula Deen Network. So they gave her all her shows, and she's going to run them all, hopefully, with other programming. But
online,
she
right?
I'm sorry?
It's online? Is it online, or where is
it? I think it's online as
yeah,
well
it's
as
online.
It's going to be on.
Yeah.
It's going to be online, but it's also going to be in, it's some basic cables are picking them up. But the neat thing
really?
About it is, yeah, she made a tart with lemon curd, okay? Now, I went to my supermarket and said, hi, where's lemon curd? And it looked at me like I swallowed a canary.
You make lemon curd.
I'm sorry?
You make lemon curd.
Noah, you can buy it in a jar. As Paula Deen said, you can buy it in a jar. They found it. It was on the shelf, on the top shelf, with a layer
yeah.
of dust on the top. It didn't expire. It just got a layer of dust. Dusted
it's very
it
easy
off,
to
and
make
it was...
Two. It's very easy to make two, Ben.
Well, I'm coming to your house. You'll show me. But I made this tart and took two bites of it and went, whoa! I wanted to just sort of like I made it and I gave it to friends and neighbors.
I made her. She has these killer Christmas cookies. They're called Meemaw's Christmas cookies. That I do a holiday tray every year and I kind of give them as gifts. And actually, I do it for my library. And then I kind of also will give them out as gifts or whatever. But I did these. They're called Meemaw's Christmas Cookies, and they are killer. They have everything in it that's
okay, awesome. I am going to your house for December seasonal holiday. She's got the cookies. Ooh.
I'm going to be making a
I can't
I'm
have
gonna...
any of that stuff. So you're just killing me.
Sorry.
I can't either, but the thing
talented.
Is, it's either that or booze, and I can't have booze either, so I figure it this way. I'll have a cookie. You know, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die happy. I can't have that and booze either, so I will die happy, you know, and it's like, oh, yes. Cookie. I don't have 16 of them. I have two. But still, it's like, who's, you know, I'm going to kill myself. We're all going to kill ourselves. We all have an expiration date. It's just when it happens, you know?
Yeah, but it's not a good thing to speed it up there, Bennett.
I'm not. Hey, I don't want to speed anything up. I want to go slow, but the good Lord won't let me. So, you know, there's a song by Weird Al Yankovic, I'll be mellow when I'm dead. So I'm waiting. I'm not going to die yet. I'll be mellow when I'm done. So,
okay, have you seen his new album? Have you listened
yes,
to the songs
it,
his new album?
Yes, it hit the Billboard number. It hit number one on Billboard. I was so thrilled. And I would love to have him playing at the Super Bowl this next year or the year after.
Oh, that would be so cool. And his thing on grammar is hysterical.
Wasn't
yeah,
it?
But I would
I
love to get
laughing.
Pharrell Williams to do Tacky with him.
Oh, yes.
Or, you
oh,
know,
that would be
funny. I would love to get, you know, Coolio to do Amish Paradise with him, you know, or whatever, or, you know, I mean, yeah, living in Amish Paradise, you know, but still, or even Don McLean to do The Saga Begins, you know, or playing background on The Saga Begins. So,
I had a friend of mine out from the Netherlands who all he wanted to do was go to Amish country in Ohio because of Amish, the song.
The Amish Paradise song?
Yeah, yes. That's the only reason he wanted to go see Amish just because of the song.
Oh,
I was
that's
like,
funny.
You're kidding me. It was hysterical. It was great.
Well,
we
have the Apocalypse Tour on DVD. And Lucas, of course, he paid for it too, but Lucas let him use Darth Vader and some of the Stormtrooper outfits, and his last call, of course, is The Saga Begins and Yoda, both that he wrote, you know. And so on stage is Darth Vader and Stormtroopers doing a kickstand, you know, doing a kick line, and he's in a brown robe and a white suit, you know, long time ago, and I'm like, God, yes, but. They were smart at the Emmys this year to have Al rewrite some of the theme songs. It was great. I wish they'd put that on CD. But Al is one of the talented, you know, he doesn't just parody a song. He owns it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I wish Michael was still...
Yeah, he makes it his own. He really does.
And I wish Michael was still with us because I could see him doing the Super Bowl and Michael would start, yeah, I'm bad. And then Al would go, yeah, I'm fat. And just having a good time with it, you know?
Oh, that's weird.
Oh,
hey,
God,
did you hear about the series of books that have just the self-published books that have hit the big time that they're about Amish in space?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, Pennsylvania. Just look it up. It's called Pennsylvania. It's a great series.
Wait a minute. That is sounding familiar.
Yeah, it is.
I'm sorry?
It's a cute series.
That is sounding familiar.
Okay.
Ladies, it's not that I don't want to talk to you forever, I do, but Mrs. Blog Talk will interrupt me in about 10 minutes going, say, it's time to go. So I want to make sure, Naomi, let me start with you, so that way you can sort of, like, last on first off. You're not leaving, but, you know.
Sorry, Brad.
Give them how, yeah, well, I'll slap you later. I'll slap you around later, okay? All kidding aside. Tell them how they can get a hold of you, what they can look for you, and how they can find you, and not home number. I don't want that. Don't do that as one of my guests almost did. I was ready to kill her. But that's besides.
How do they
find you? Your link stinks and jinxes.
I can be found at the author CEO, authorceo.com, and I have a Facebook page as well. That is obviously Author CEO. And then I'm at Twitter at nblackburn01. Google Plus, all those good ones. And then on LinkedIn as well. And I'm pleased to announce here is that I will be becoming a guest contributor to Bad Redhead Media. We talked about the great Rachel Thompson, and I'm going to
Rachel hasn't asked me, and I'm hurting. Yes, that's Rachel Thompson. That's the one that does Let's Talk with me. I love her.
Yeah.
I wish she'd ask me. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so I'm tickled pink. I'm giddy as a schoolgirl.
Wait a second. I don't see you tickled pink. I think you tickled red, but that's okay.
God, is it that transparent? Am I that transparent? So
okay.
That's me in a nutshell.
You and I will talk later, either today or tomorrow. We need to talk, you and I, anyway, but not about Bad Redhead Media. Even though I do love Rachel and I love her dearly. That's why she's my co-host on Let's Talk.
I swear. Huh?
Yeah, I know. It's all your fault. We know. Valerie, would you like to tell them how they can get a hold of you and what's your latest book and where they can find you and other than Tano sending smoke signals?
Well, you can always find me just by typing Valerie Douglas Books, and you'll find my website, and you'll find my Facebook page. I've got a part of an anthology right now called Wings of Fantasy that's got my Song of the Fairy Queen in it, and also the admin of the 7,000-strong indie author group on Facebook.
And all I'm going to ask you is a very silly, stupid question. Is Valerie Devereaux ever going to write anything anymore?
Yes. Oddly enough, I started another demon book. So there's a definite possibility. But I've been trying to focus more on my fantasies because I really do like
writing fantasy novels.
Let me explain to the listener. Valerie Devereaux is also Valerie Douglas. So if you're going to send me hate mail and say, who the heck is that? That's her. I'm allowed to tell you that, yeah, I'm Miss Valerie Devereaux. Maybe Valerie Devereaux will ask me to write the forward to her book or something. I love that. Yeah, sure.
Okay. There you go.
I'm sorry?
I would let you do that. I'm actually trying to get back one of my other erotica novels, and I'm going to combine it in together with Cooking Class, and because it's also about cooking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, I can't eat any of the stuff that's in the books anymore, but but yeah, but it'll be a nice box
set.
Yes,
I think I could write it. I think from tonight's show, I think you can realize I could write a forward to that.
Yeah, you can.
Sherry, yes, I could. I'm guilty. I know, other than misspelling your name on the promo, which I will correct. I know you have witnesses that will slap me around if you don't. Tell them about your 99-cent special and your deal that you have basically with your website and all the other things, so that way we can make sure that it's all written down and said and everything else, and nobody gets mad at me. Sherry?
Hello, Sherry.
Sherry,
you
with
us?
Can you hear
me? Yes,
yeah,
I am. I was
now.
Hoping you'd notice. I dropped, my line dropped again. I had to call back like I did last night.
It happens. It happens. It's live radio.
Oh,
I will ask you, how do your links, spinks, and jinxes other than Tano sending smoke signals?
Okay. Well, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, and Kobo. All my books are there. But the best place to track me down is my website, which is www.sherryhaysauthor.com. It has summaries of my books.
It's an I, not a Y, guys. Spell it correctly. I don't want to get emails.
And I just had a new release on Thursday, the third book in my Daniels Brothers series. It's contemporary romance. With some mystery and suspense. It's called Crossing the Line, but in honor of that release, the first book in the series, Behind Closed Doors, which is also contemporary romance with some mystery and suspense elements in it, is on sale from now until the 10th for only 99 cents. So, and you can get that on Amazon, iBooks, and from my publisher's website. So go and download it and fall in love with these brothers, because I absolutely love them. And Bennett has read Crossing the Line, so my new book, and he
and there will
it,
be a
so.
Review on Amazon in the next week if I live. I'm going to a bat mitzvah on this Thursday with my mother, and I'm staying at my aunt's, so I'm going to have it from the woman that bore me into this world and the woman that's raised me most of my life, and I'm going to have a double trouble. So it's going to be so wonderful. If you guys are Jewish, you'll understand. It's so much fun. Oh, yeah. Okay. All kidding aside, by the way, I will say this because I know they'll listen to this after. Dina, I know I'll be there. Cousin Bennett will be there, and happy bat mitzvah, and I will be there, I promise. And so, you know, I want to make sure she hears it, you know, so that way, you know, I've mentioned her name on the air. Oh, my God. Yes. Cousin Bennett did something right. Okay. Yes. That's all I'm good for, is just doing wrong things. You know, it's like, yeah, okay. I have to say a couple of things before we go. One is always, I think, Marcia Casper Cook and Virginia Grenier, because if it's not for them, I wouldn't have this lovely show. Thank you, ladies, as always. They are the powers that be. They are the World of Ink Network. They have a great, great set of great people. This is their network, and I thank them for letting me have this time. I'm so glad we had this time. Never mind. Okay, I don't want to do Carol Burnett either. I'm tugging my ear. Okay, making everybody happy. All kidding aside, I thank all the fans, because if it wasn't for you guys sending me emails, sending the love that you do, we wouldn't be doing a show like this. I thank all the people around that do care. When I've been sick, you guys have always been, it's better than chicken noodle soup sometimes getting an email of there, and when I'm wrong or right or somebody hears something and says something, I'm grateful to hear it. And it is one of the humblingest effects ever. I thank my guests for this evening. Yes, Patty Barrington has left the room, but thank you, Patty. When you hear the show, thank you. We love you. Valerie Douglas, you know I love you. And, you know,
yeah,
more
I
than
do.
Ever. I know you do. I know, but I could say it. Naomi Blackburn, I am coming to the, I don't know when. Find out when the Skins are playing. I'll come. The Redskins. Yes, the Washington Redskins. Who cares if the Washington Post don't want to hear their name? Too bad. When they play, you know, get me a ticket. I will come down and visit you, and I'll go watch the game, and I'll help clean up I'll pig out. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry Hayes, what can I tell you? I didn't kick the cat, so we're good. But she'll never forget that one, okay? I won't either. But, no, thank you. Thank you all, ladies, for a wonderful evening. And let's all do this again soon. And everybody have a good 2 weeks. Fly right, be well. And I will see you in 2 weeks, when my guests on Any Which Way But Loose will be Marjorie Wallingham, Rhonda Lee Carter, Lori Hayes, no relation to the guests here tonight, and Annette Hoffman. So it'll be a lovely, lovely time with guests. We'll be discussing. We don't know what we discuss. When it happens, it happens. I plan, but I don't plan. And I have, you know, we have great times and great people. And I thank the ladies tonight, and I thank all of you for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.